This is a podcast from Minute Media.
3-2, it's not 5-0, but what an incredible road trip for the Chicago Bulls. Welcome in to the Windy City Bulls podcast. I know my Bulls fans out there, you've been waiting for it. So here it is, Coach A and Brian Beto coming on up. But we recorded after four games, so I want to throw in a little bit on the Nuggets. Last night, it takes a lot for me to record on a Saturday evening, but wanted to get this podcast out and just wanted to celebrate another Bulls win. And I don't care that Nikola Jokic did not play. We didn't have Vooch. They didn't have Jokic. That's not exactly a wash, but close enough. And Derrick Jones's dunk last night against the Nuggets, if you didn't see it, he gets the ball basically, I don't know, a step inside the free-throw line. And, I mean, he's a slam dunk champion, but this was just big, big, big time. And the Bulls are super fun right now. I was reading Casey Johnson's piece today over at NBC Sports Chicago. I did not know. DeMar DeRozan leads the NBA with 118 fourth-quarter points. That's incredible. You know who's second? That would be Zach LaVine with 101. That's amazing to me. The Bulls have the first and second scores in the fourth quarter. And I think it's really interesting how Billy Donovan is choosing to use them. Basically, in my mind at least, he's prioritized DeMar. DeMar, you're getting it first, but it ends up going back and forth. Zach certainly getting his opportunities. He had the one shot he hit in the fourth quarter last night where he's dribbling to his left. I thought he was going to throw it back to the guard, but he pulls up from the three-point line and buries it. Good God, that was an incredibly difficult shot. And DeMar can get to the foul line, making his free throws. The Bulls not missing free throws last night. That was amazing. And, yeah, we're going to talk about DeMar DeRozan coming up here. I did not know that this guy is this good. And he had a hell of an offseason, too. And he's in incredible shape. But credit to Mark Eversley and Arturis and everybody for going out and getting DeRozan because he has changed this team. Flat out changed it. So has Alex Caruso. Alex Caruso is the – you know who he is? He's the absolute nightmare that you want to see when you step on the basketball court if he's not on your team. If you're going – like I went to the University of Iowa. If you were showing up at the Fieldhouse to play pickup hoop, which is basically all I did at the University of Iowa, the last guy you want to see is Caruso. Not going to score a ton, but he's going to make your day miserable. And that's what he does to Steph Curry or Paul George or whoever. Damian Lillard, CJ McCollum. In the Nuggets game last night, I mean, Stacey King was going absolutely nuts as he was able to shut down Monte Morris, which, okay, not necessarily a household name, but Caruso's just flat out awesome. And the Bulls, imagine if they had Patrick Williams, the forgotten man, right? But that'd be another good physical perimeter and in the post defender to add into what they're doing. So not only can they score, but they can defend. I don't know. Phoenix Suns last year, Chicago Bulls this year. That's the tallest that I've gone this season. But I do see some similarities, at least that the Suns came out of nowhere and the Bulls are coming out of nowhere. No one, Mark Eversley, Arturis, Billy Donovan, Coach A included, thought they would be here. But on that note, let's bring in Coach A and Brian Beto. A lot on this podcast as we will discuss the DeRozan emergence and pretty much everything that I just teed up here. Actually, one other thing that I wanted to hit on this little pregame. I saw an article by PlayAZ.com. It was a survey. The best and worst NBA mascots ranked by sports fans. And Benny the Bull was ranked number two behind the Rocky the Mountain Lion of the Denver Nuggets. Benny the Bull 2, Grizz of the Grizzlies 3, Champ of the Mavericks is 4, Bango the Buck 5, and on down. Let me just say something. Benny the Bull has had different people in that bull suit. Benny the Bull got arrested. Benny the Bull, I think the last Benny the Bull retired, and now we got a new guy in there. Look, until Benny the Bull gets rid of the ridiculous popcorn act where he walks behind the basket, he's walking on the top of seats, and then he falls over and spills popcorn on everyone, Benny the Bull should not be on the list. That is an offense to Bulls fans who are paying good money to sit in those seats. They don't need popcorn dumped on them by Benny the Bull so the 3,000 people at the United Center could find it funny. I find it offensive, and I'm saying this tongue-in-cheek, but somewhat serious. Benny, step up your game. Dumping popcorn on the fans, it's just not that great. It's not a good look, Benny. You're better than that, buddy. And by the way, this Benny the Bull, you know he does that over-the-shoulder half-court shot backwards? The old Benny the Bull, dude could nail it. This guy sucks. Nowhere close. I don't even know if it's a guy. Maybe it's a girl. Whatever. Whoever's in that costume sucks. And nowhere close to knocking down that shot. Might as well get that shot out of the repertoire here because you can't make it. So Benny the Bull being number two, that is like a great hitting first baseman getting a gold glove. This is based on reputation. Back in the day, this current Benny the Bull, plus the popcorn, which takes in the old Benny the Bull, adding in nothing new, no way you're number two, bud. No way. It's an overrated, absolute blasphemer rating by PlayAZ.com. Benny the Bull is not number two. He should be at best 22. All right, on that note, let's get into it. The Windy City Podcast with Brian Beto and Coach A starts right now.
Showtime.
Coach A, you've got a new microphone. Congratulations, Beto. Good job getting Coach A through the augmentation of that. And you were the guy that said 51 wins. So I think we got to lead off with your optimism and your foresight and your brilliance on how good this basketball team is. Beto, what did you say, actually? How many wins did you have? 47, I want to say?
Yeah, I think I was I thought it was 49, 47, but it wasn't to the level of a Coach A optimism. It was good, not that strong.
Right. I mean, we got Coach A, we doff our chapeau to you. We bow down to your basketball brilliance. And
well, there's a long way to go to getting to the 51 still, but I appreciate that. At least everybody's talking about them, right?
Yeah.
They are, and they're talking about the team. A lot of people are talking about DeMar, and he was messed up in San Antonio for whatever reason, and he's fired up to be in Chicago, and he saw what everybody was saying about him, that he's washed and he was super motivated, and Stacey King is calling him DeMarvelous. I'm going to be honest, I which I think is phenomenal. One of King's all time great nicknames, but you know, I didn't watch a ton of Raptors basketball, so you don't really know what he's doing every night, but this dude's footwork and his ability to just get himself shots, and he is crafty as hell. I don't know. I've just enjoyed DeMarvelous. Can we start there? Is everybody feeling that DeMar is this good buzz? Like, I didn't realize he was this good is what I guess what I'm getting at.
I'll let Beto start.
Oh,
what did you think?
I mean, I was definitely in the camp of not the people who were like, oh, that's a terrible signing. We're signing the offseason. I was excited about it, but I didn't think I anticipated him potentially being their best player. I still think Zach might be, but I think it's an argument. The fact that it's an argument is kind of a legit argument is crazy. I look at what he's done and just his, you talk about his Toronto days, he's really evolved as a player, right? I mean, he's still athletic, but I mean, this was like a slam dunk champion type guy with crazy athleticism and burst. And the fact that he's turned himself into, trust me, I'm not making this same type of comparison that he's the same player, but it's kind of got that like little like late 90s Jordan type of vibe to his game of just turning himself into a really strong, efficient jump shooter in traffic. And his ability to be able to feed off his other teammates and get to the line, which is something Coach said right when they signed him, was going to be a huge plus because they were terrible at that. It's unbelievable. Like the guy is literally, if you said, hey, who are the MVPs of the league? He's in the top five, right? In the league right now. And I don't think anyone would have forecasted that, even though I thought it was going to be a good signing for the Bulls.
Yeah. I mean, certainly there was no forecast of DeMar being this good. Similar to you, Mark, I didn't see him play a lot in San Antonio. I probably saw him play a decent amount with Toronto, but I didn't see him play a lot with San Antonio. And I would guess that because he didn't play so well in San Antonio, I think he played actually okay in San Antonio. They turned him into a little more of a point forward there. And because of that, I thought he was an older player. The one thing that has been if I would say what the biggest surprise is the shape that DeMar DeRozan looks to be in. Like when you look at some players who get to be about this age, you start to see the wear and tear on their body. You look at DeMar and you don't see a wear and tear on his body. And, you know, the other day, I think Stacey King was saying that this guy's indestructible. He's barely been hurt in a regular season, you know, like, and of course I say that now and he's going to go out for the season with an ACL injury. But like, you know, either way, we're just saying that he keeps himself in great shape. So I was most concerned that in year two or three of the deal that you were going to say, you know, he's a good player, but he's getting older and, you know, the Bulls window was Zach LaVine. Like, do they have the money now to get a different player? And DeRozan has kind of made me feel a lot better about that for sure.
And DeMarvelous. He had to replace that though, because we got rid of Thad for that trade, and the Thaddeus Johnson was one of his best Stacey Kingisms. So he had to come up with something as good as DeMarvelous.
The guy is just, we love you, Stacey King. And, somehow Give Me the Hot Sauce should come on to Windy and let's just all have a good time. I rewinding back to Toronto, whenever I saw DeMar play generally, what I focused on, what I remembered is whenever they would run into the Cavs and he sucked. I mean, they were brutal and he was not a primetime performer in the biggest moments. So I did not have the proper respect for him. I'm outing myself one more time on DeMar, but that's where I saw him the most. He would wilt in the playoffs, and because
you're not wrong about that. I mean, you're not wrong about that. And I don't think it's a matter of wilting in the playoffs. I think if there's one negative to DeRozan's game, is he's a little bit of a one-on-one player. And I think maybe going to San Antonio, that's helped him a little bit, because he was forced down there to become more of a team player within the system guy. But if you looked at the game against Portland and you look at when their offense struggles, they can become just a, it's your turn, it's my turn offense with Zach and DeMar. And that's one area that certainly Vucevic helps, because he gives them a legitimate post to set that ball screen and run some other actions off of it. But there are times where we are just giving the ball to DeRozan, just saying, go to work and go one-on-one. And in the Portland game, that kind of cost him the game a little bit, you know,
I definitely fell asleep at halftime and could not believe when I woke up in the fourth quarter and they were losing and I watched the last 2 minutes. So yeah. I don't know what
I happened. Watched it. Yeah. I watched the disaster that was that second half.
I didn't watch any second of the second half. I'm just going to be honest with our listeners, but
you know, that DeRozan and LaVine are phenomenal. And Lonzo Ball is, you know, it's like anything. And when they played the Lakers and everybody's got it going, it's great. Right. But you also have to recognize the weaknesses as well. So the weaknesses Golden State really pointed out are weakness. If you have athletic sized wings to defend Zach and DeRozan, we can be defended a lot different than the Lakers. That's why I'm not big on the Lakers. You look at the Lakers' size on the perimeter. Now, obviously, LeBron makes that better, but it's just not good. You know, it's just not good. And, you know, Portland really dug in with Powell. They brought in Tony Snell. As much as Tony Snell, you and I, we're not going to be Tony Snell fans, but Tony Snell's 6'7", and his
freaking length, skinny wing. Sorry, I his length, get that.
His length affected DeRozan. It was different than shooting over THT. THT, it was like money in the bank. But Snell puts those long arms up, and DeRozan missed some shots. So
skinny wing was from which? What was that? You picked
a wasn't a Ron Adams?
It was Ron Adams. You picked a skinny wing. Who did he want them to take?
I was gonna say Draymond, but no, that was the Marcus Teague pick, right?
I think
either way, they weren't thrilled, or Ron Adams was not thrilled, right? That's the word on the street.
He stormed into Pax's office or Gar's office like a skinny wing. Nick, you friggin' idiot.
Yeah,
the Ed Obradovich.
You know, my comment when they drafted him, he scored 5 points in the NCAA tournament game, because I drafted him in my the player pool stuff that I do. I drafted him. He scored 5 points. So I was like, can he really play? He scored 5 points in the tournament game.
But everyone's like, oh, he's basically Kawhi because he's from the, you know, same conference and same town and all that stuff. He's not Kawhi.
And he doesn't speak. Tony Snell. I can't believe we got a side of Tony Snell out of nowhere.
But, good for him, though. Like, we clowned him, but he's had a nice, like, he's been in the league, played on some good teams, roll off the bench. He's still in. Good for him.
Yep. And we'll always remember the moment that he did not give Joakim Noah the chest bump, which is another great moment in Tony Snell. Get up!
Top Bulls moment, no doubt.
And Noah apologized for that on the back end, too. He's like, look, now that I've been the 15th guy, I know how hard that role is. But T Snell was like, look, man, I'm not enthused at all. I'm not playing. I don't care. I know I'm done here. Get me out of here. That dude... I've never interviewed anybody else who has stared at me like Tony Snell. And like Casey Johnson would write about it, the penetrating stare of Tony Snell. Like he would just look at you and like, okay, easy. I got you, T. Snell. All right, let's remotely stay on focus with this Bulls team. You know, another thing I didn't know, I didn't realize that Lonzo Ball was this knockdown three-point shooter. You know, he had an ugly shot when he came in the league, and now it's like you just think it's going in, right? I mean,
yeah, absolutely. He's really developed that part of his game, you know. And again, give Lonzo credit. Lonzo, Caruso, and DeRozan, their strengths, when those guys are playing to their strengths, they're really good. You know, they're really good. And Lonzo is the perfect player for LaVine and DeRozan. It was interesting. I was listening. I can't remember who it was. I was hearing on the radio and they're talking about Lillard versus LaVine. I'm like, well, if you bring Damian Lillard here and trade Zach LaVine, like what's the point of having Lonzo Ball? Like, and basically you just wasted a $20 million, you know, you just wasted $20 million a year you gave to Lonzo Ball. So I love Lonzo Ball for what he does for this team defensively. He and Caruso at the end of games defensively are just fantastic. And then you do have two great offensive players around them with a third offensive player. If he figures it out, you give three great offensive players around those two defensive players. And like you just said, Mark, Ball and Caruso can make three-point shots. So it's not like having, you know, non-entities on offense out there. They're two great defenders that still fulfill a role around three stud offensive players. I would take the Bulls starting five. It's one of the five best starting fives in the NBA. The question is, you know, bench play and depth and things like that, but it's probably one of the five best starting fives in the NBA with them all rolling.
Is anybody weirded out or just kind of looking curiously at the fact that Ball rarely brings the ball up? Like I thought this was traditional point guard dude who was going to run the team. And a lot of times it's DeMar bringing it up or Zach bringing it up, or even I feel like a big is bringing it up and DeRozan, or rather Ball, is standing in the corner. Have you noticed that?
Yeah. I think at times, and coach, I'm curious your thoughts on this too, like from an X and O standpoint, but I think the Bulls, one thing I've noticed is that they tend to play matchups pretty well based on who's guarding and who brings it up. And because of Lonzo's ability to catch and shoot in the off guard position, I think it gives them that versatility to be able to do so. Right. So you mentioned the 3-point shot. I mean, this guy's gotten better at it every year in the league. From 2 feet to 23 feet, he's shooting like 12%, it feels like, but from three, he's deep. And I think it just provides some versatility and allows the Bulls to exploit the matchups based on who's guarding who, because they have so many weapons offensively.
Yeah. I mean, that's a good question, Mark. I haven't noticed that as much as maybe you've noticed that. I would guess a big part of that is 75% of the NBA, the pick and roll. And you're not going to put Lonzo in a ton of pick and roll stuff because he doesn't do well under the 3-point line. He's just not under the 3-point line player for the most part. And so my guess is that they start the offense a lot with Zach and DeRozan because you're going into a ball screen. So instead of having to waste some time to make a pass to them, there are times they just want to get right into the ball screen from the start. You know, you only got 24 seconds on the shot clock. So sure, there are times that they do it, do have Lonzo bring it up in that sense, but then there's times where they want to get into that pick and roll offense, you know, right away from the top without a pass.
How hard is it to learn the floater?
You know, it's not even about, obviously, give him credit. He's improved a piece of his game. The thing that he did in the Portland game that you guys didn't see in the second half, going against a small guard, he actually exploded to the hoop. He actually really exploded to the hoop and made a couple layups. So right now, I think maybe that's more where you're going to see Lonzo is say, all right, I'm 6'5", 6'6". Can he improve his ability to finish at the hoop more like that? You know, and then he's got to be able to make a 15 to 18 foot shot. He can't, he doesn't make that shot very well. And he's left open for it a lot, but he does. And so I think Jeff Van Gundy was on the other day and he says, you know, DeMar DeRozan, that shot's a great shot. Lonzo Ball, not so much. And so Lonzo's caught in that tough situation analytically that one, it's not the shot you really want, a 15, 18 foot shot to begin with. And then when you add that he's a bad percentage shooter at it, it's almost like teams are just giving him that shot. And at some point for him to really elevate his game, he does have to be able to make that with a little more consistency.
To your point with the pick and roll too, right? The team's playing in the drop coverage so often that that 15 to 18 foot shot is going to be open. And it's only good if, to your point, if you shoot it at a DeRozan like clip at that efficiency and he's just not doing it. But I think that you're spot on. It's so funny to see and be able to just shoot so well from three and then you move him 5 feet in and his percentage gets shaved off like 10%. It's crazy. It's
unbelievable. The logic, right? You would think, come on, man, off the bounce, wide open 15, 18 footer. That's money all day long. You're an NBA basketball player, but so I do. And coach, that's interesting too. Like he doesn't need to learn the floater. He needs to be able to, he needs to take a couple dribbles in and be able to just pop it and, you know, come off the pick and roll and drill an 18 footer and then, and hit it at what, I guess, I don't know, 60%, something like that to make it worthwhile. All right. We just got very numbersy.
I said, he's the man though. Like we're nitpicking. If this is like the problem with Lonzo, like he's been fantastic.
No, he's been.
I don't agree with that Beto. I mean, you're supposed to nitpick. I mean, the goal is be 10-5 in the regular season. The goal is eventually to be, are you a championship team? So his weaknesses are his weaknesses, and they're going to get dredged up. When you get into a playoff game and Lonzo Ball goes 2-for-9 from the field and scores 5 points and has 3 assists and the Bulls lose 110-103 to the Milwaukee Bucks, that's going to be the story the next day.
For sure. I'm just saying, like, for what we sign him for based on that, and because my point being is, like, he's not a finished product, right? So it's hard, I feel like, in any sport or at any age to – literally change overnight and everything. So he improved his 3-point shooting and that's maybe the next thing he needs to bite off. But I think as a whole, I think compared to what we weren't when we signed him for 20 mil, like are you happy with the results so far holistically, knowing that he still has some things he need to improve? I guess that's what I was getting at.
100%. And this pod for the record has been supporting the Lonzo Ball signing way in advance. Long of it, actually.
Time. Yeah. Right. We talked about it last year. We all were positive towards the Bulls making that trade last year.
And all right. So one of us on this pod was not as positive on the Vooch trade. And I think it looks a lot better now because they're in the mix and I did not think they'd be this far in the mix, but I do want to throw out there that, you know, I think Stacey was talking about the death lineup the other night and with Derek Jones in there and the Bulls having Caruso, Ball, Jones, DeMar and Zach. And it just causes teams a whole ton of problems. So I do wonder, like, if that is actually their best lineup, that Vooch, even when he gets back healthy, is not actually their best sort of quote-unquote death lineup when you have an athletic big like that who can finish at the rim. It looks real good at times, I'll tell you that.
100% no, Mark.
100% no.
100% no. All right. I mean, Derek Jones, the Golden State game was a tremendous example of why you need a player like Vucevic. And I guarantee you they did a good job. The Bulls did. Billy Donovan did a great job because I guarantee you after that Golden State game, he showed Derek Jones how Thaddeus Young played last year and Tony Bradley. The problem is Tony Bradley can't do it. And Derek Jones has been able to improve upon it a little bit, but then he had four fouls in 9 minutes. I mean, he's physically, you know, physically overwhelmed. Like, you can't count on that guy in that situation. But basically what teams just did is at Golden State just doubled LaVine and DeRozan. They said, go ahead, set a screen with Derek Jones, set a screen with Tony Bradley. They just doubled it and said, throw the ball to those guys and make them try to make a play. And it was a disaster. And so Jones did a little better in the Lakers game and the Clippers game. You know, they did a little better with it. I think they probably showed them, like I said, clips of Thaddeus Young last year and how they attacked that when they did that to Zach last year. But Vucevic takes that away. Vucevic just hasn't shot well yet and hasn't played well. But if we get the Orlando Magic or even last year hot shooting Vucevic, man, he opens up so much for this team offensively. And from a size perspective, he does get double-digit rebounds, and he looks way better defensively this year because guys like Caruso and Lonzo Ball, LaVine playing harder, they're chasing off of that ball screen where Kobe White and Zach last year and those guys would just get stuck on it and put Vucevic in a position where he was awful, right? But now that he's got actual good defenders running through that pick and roll, he's been a lot better defensively.
Kobe White looks like a dude that is so dying to get out of here. He is – that body language ain't great. Beto, you want to comment?
His body language. Is this like a Jay Cutler discussion all over again?
It's over for Kobe White in Chicago.
He just played two games here. He might be. I mean, they could trade him. Io's looks spectacular.
Carl, you're tough, man.
Yeah.
Kobe White, done.
He's done here. He is. You've got big, long guards on four-year deals, three-year deals. It's over.
I think like this – I think he actually – like, I mean, it's clear like he maybe not be the guy that people were hoping he would be. But on this team, and Coach talked about it earlier, that worried about like the starting five is great, some depth. They need some scoring depth. So his ability to shoot the ball off the bench in theory should be actually fit, I feel like, well on this group. It takes away minutes from Io, who has exceeded my expectations. I was with Coach. I wanted like Jared Butler or the other, was it Sharif Cooper, I want to say, when the Bulls are up. But
that's where I get to raise my hand and say that I said Io. I was a big believer in Io.
But what reason? Just because he was from Chicago and he went to Illinois?
No, because I was sitting courtside at Wildcats, Illinois, and I saw this guy go coast to coast. I'm like, that is an NBA freaking player all day long.
I mean, you're right. He's been really good. But to Kobe, I mean, he's played two games. He's been out. Like, you know, the first time he has like a 25-point game off the bench where he's like, 7 of 9 from three, you're going to be back on the Kobe White bandwagon.
Oh, and for the record, I like Kobe White. I think he's got a spot.
You loved him. Interviewed him before the draft. You're like, I want this guy, right?
Yeah. I like Kobe. I just don't think that this particular situation is going to work out with everything they've added on. And I honestly do think that looking at him and I'm not talking about how he's running around on the court, but just Look at what's happened. He's lucky to get 10 minutes a night. And this is a guy that's used to having the ball in his hands. A young player. If you put him on a polygraph right now, do you want to be in Chicago? he is saying, get me somewhere where I can play. 100%.
Of course. Yeah. I mean, of course that's what he wants, but overstating him being done, that's overstating. And the truth is, it is two games that he was coming in with a minutes restriction to begin with. And I have no idea. Like I'd have to see practice, like as a coach, Mark, I would have to see practice to be like, all right,
nope, he's done.
Where's Kobe right now? Like Kobe White in practice right now might be like literally just trying to get in shape. Like he may be just trying to get in shape. And remember, it was a shoulder injury. So shooting, like he wasn't shooting for a long time. Like it's so much feel to come back. And then they're not even giving him the ball to let him cook at all. They're basically just saying, hey, just stand here. And if we throw you the ball, you know, think about shooting it if you're open. right? Because the ball's in DeMar's hands with that second group. So give him a little bit to see if, like, on a day where we let him try to cook and see what happens before you just summarily dismiss him as a player.
Yeah, I'm not, he's Johnny Flynn. He's like all of a candy. He's a bust.
Again, I'm not dismissing him as a player. I'm dismissing him as a bull. And
I know we're putting words in your mouth.
And another thing, NBC Sports Chicago, I stuck around for the postgame show on his first game, and great job as always, Will Perdue, Kendall Gill, Jason Goff. Awesome. And they had to show Coby White highlights because he's back. Well, what were the highlights? Here's Coby White missing a pull-up 15-footer. Here's Coby White getting swatted. They didn't have a shot to show him making a shot.
He hasn't made a shot yet. That's where I think the body language – but I think that's where your body language situation comes in. Like, yeah, I don't think he – I think he's a little disappointed. You come in and you're 0-for-5 in your first two games, I'm sure. You know, this is a guy who has got the scoring championship of the North Carolina high school basketball. I mean, this guy is – give the guy a little ability to bounce back. And he's shown the ability to do that in the past when he struggled. Give him a little rope. Give him a little rope to figure it out here. Right.
Do you agree with the assessment? Like, I agree. I get Mark's point, like maybe long-term, who knows if he's a fit given all the pieces they have, but coach, I'm curious your thought. Like, do you think cause I think he actually does fit well on this year's team if he's able to shoot well, because they need some second unit scoring. But absolutely. What are your thoughts on that?
I think Coby White could be Jordan Clarkson, and just give him the time to figure that out, right? I think he can be that kind of player. DeMar DeRozan, you can't just throw the ball in DeMar DeRozan's hands every night on the second unit and say, go, you know, shoot the ball 15 times with this group. Like, he's going to need another player off that bench. And look, I love Ayo Dosunmu. He's off to a great start, and he plays hard. He plays great defense. He's got a place in the league. I still haven't seen him make a 3-point shot on the West Coast yet. Like, the end of the day, you know, he's going, you thrust him into more minutes and important minutes, you'll see the issues that Ayo brings to the court, right? So at the end of the day, you know, Coby White has shown in this league he can score 25 to 30 points on a given night. He can get hot and hit shots. And the Bulls team, when you take out Levine and Ball, they don't have much shooting. So, and Vucevic, obviously, they don't have a lot of shooting. So that bench of Javonte Green and Derrick Jones, and who else is on that bench that we're playing? Tony Bradley, Ayo Dosunmu, Alize Johnson, like, dude, you better have someone that can shoot. There's going to be a time where no one makes a shot. And yep. Mark, you're going to be screaming that, telling, put Coby in.
Yep.
We need somebody to hit that shot. He's wide open in the corner. Somebody better hit that shot.
So, okay, if you had to bet, go on record right now, will Coby White be with this team after the trade deadline this year?
I say yes, because unless he turns it around, like, what are you getting for him that's going to help you this year?
Fair point. But
I agree with that.
Somebody might take it depends how poorly the Bulls think of how he fits with what they're trying to do. I'll say it like that, which is the nicest way of putting it. They didn't draft him. This is not an Arturis pick.
Gotten rid of all the other previous picks, right?
They're all gone. Yeah, we don't see Wendell Carter running around here.
Lowry's out.
We flipped the whole roster here. So do they make a trade that they can live with? I don't know. I would think that somebody would give them up something that might make it palatable for them, thinking that, you know what, we have a chance to actually do something this year. Which, speaking of that, what do you think they have? If you look at the East right now, and you look at what Kyrie's situation in Brooklyn, I don't know what's going on in Milwaukee. Their regular season struggles are probably being overblown right now. But the conference, at least a little bit, feels wide open right now, does it not?
100% agree that it's open. You know, obviously there's three teams that are better than the Bulls with everything being right. And if the Brooklyn Nets get Kyrie Irving back, and Harden is in great shape, or in his usual shape, you know, that's that team. The Bucks certainly, regardless of what the regular season looks like, if Middleton, Holiday, and Giannis are healthy in the playoffs, they're the favorites because they won last year, and that's a tough three group of guys with experience winning. And then the third is the Sixers, depending on what happens with Ben Simmons, right? If Ben Simmons comes back, the Sixers are, again, a talented team, right? If Simmons is traded for, let's say, Portland trades Damian Lillard to the Sixers for Ben Simmons, all of a sudden, the Sixers are a really legit team. So those are the three teams that I would say will be a challenge for the Bulls to beat. But I would put the Bulls up against any other team in the East. And with the potential issues of the Nets and the Bucks and the Sixers, the Bulls have a shot. They have a legit shot.
Yeah, I mean, look at last year, right? Like, would we have thought that? I know, Coach, you called it, but with the injuries and stuff, would you have thought that the Suns would get there or they'd be the best team? So there's no – I know Durant and LeBron are still around, but this isn't like Miami in 2012 where outside of Derrick Rose being hurt, there was like anyone that had a chance to get to the finals. But it's just like, be playing well, set yourself up, and you never know. Maybe Kyrie never comes back. Maybe Milwaukee has an injury. Maybe Ben Simmons doesn't come back. Maybe Miami doesn't fully click. Like, who knows?
Right. And I should say I left out Miami. Miami, obviously.
They're good too.
But again, Butler and Lowry have shown the ability to not be available as far as things go. And I don't think the Bulls are – I think from a talent perspective, the Bulls are there with Miami. I think Miami just has some experience that would be challenging for the Bulls. But – I think the Bulls are as talented as Miami. The Bucks, those three guys really rolling. The Nets, those three guys playing. The Sixers, replace Simmons with a great player. Simmons comes back. I see those three teams is probably a little stronger than the Bulls at this moment. But with the problems of those three teams, I like the Bulls as much as anybody.
The fact that we're even talking about them in discussion is kind of exciting. We're literally talking about the Bulls, like who's better than them. And the fact that they're at least involved is quite a change.
We need to talk about the Scottie Pippen, Michael Jordan thing. Oh, I mean, it's a Bulls podcast, though. We do have to talk about it. We're from that era, so we can't not talk about that on this podcast, right? If someone's coming to listen to this podcast, we got to at least let people know our opinions, right?
So we've got 4 minutes in Zoom time to do it. I've done two podcasts by myself, just screaming into the microphone, which clearly you guys have not listened to, but I highly recommend both of them. Actually, I had Sam Smith on one of them. And then the other one, I just had to do an impromptu. I can't stand this guy. He is such a, my first thought was he's such a fucking asshole. And the next one was he's such a piece of shit. I didn't want to say either of those, but it's so incredibly disappointing. But go ahead, Beto. What do you want to say about Pippen?
I mean, all of my thoughts are basically what yours are. So I don't want to spend too much time on it. But it doesn't bother me because it's almost gotten to the point of just being sad. Like, it's actually pathetic. Yeah. So, like, that's what I just can't let it get under my skin because it's so off the wall and it's so self-promotional about everything he's got going on between his book and bourbon and like whatever, that I just can't let it, like, it just doesn't affect any, it just drives me nuts because he's so far off base that if I do let it get under my skin, it's all I'm going to think about. It's which is, I feel like it's probably how you are.
I literally spent yesterday counting the amount of assists in the final.
I saw that. You said 209 to 207.
Yeah. 209 right? to 207. You
Jordan
dick.
Had more assists.
More assists. He had more assists than you. Mr. Ruined Basketball. And by the way, you were supposed to be the distributor. I can't stand him.
I'm
just,
done with him.
Listen, I love Scotty. Great. I love him. You know, and I think though everything negative said about him is deserved, right? As much as I love him, everything that's said about him is 100% deserved. Because a lot of people, when they would ask about that Last Dance, I said, if you lived in Chicago during that time, the guy who did the video, the documentary, he lived that time period. I said, if you lived that time period, that is exactly the emotions that we went through with Scottie Pippen. Correct. It was not just, this is the greatest player. It was the ups and downs with him. And I thought Jeff Van Gundy, I'll just repeat what Jeff Van Gundy said. as great a player as he was, top 50 player, Hall of Fame or whatever, the title of his book should probably be Thanks, Michael.
Right. That right. So good.
And that's for all of those players. They can all, you know, kiss every Chicago fan's ass, whether you're Luke Longley or anybody else, that you want to go after Michael Jordan. Listen, take Michael Jordan off that team. You guys are the same people that surrounded Derrick Rose for those years. Steve, no one cares about you. No one remembers you outside of Joakim Noah, right? There's one, maybe one of you guys would be remembered.
Right.
That's just the truth.
Steve Kerr credits, he goes, I'm probably not even the coach of the Warriors without Michael Jordan, because I don't get my job in broadcasting, because if I'm not associated with Michael Jordan, otherwise I'm some random guy off the bench.
Come on.
Why am I getting hired? And then he goes, I'm not getting the coaching job. It wasn't the broadcasting and being in those circles. So he's like, he's literally the reason why.
They were part, those guys were part of the greatest show maybe in all of sports over a 10-year period. Like the show that was the Chicago Bulls with Michael Jordan over a 10-year period, I don't know if it'll ever be duplicated again.
Scotty, you're a dick. You're an enormous fucking dick. And it's really fucking sad.
But the Bulls are back. But the Bulls are back.
Bulls are back. Don't question that.
I don't want to speculate, but I do know in our line of work that he's coming out with a new drink and he's coming out with a new book. So maybe this is all marketing.
He said that Mike was in the huddle basically doing the last dance in 1997, speaking to the cameras. I'm not saying Mike's not calculated, but that's a level of calculation. I mean, in the moment of game six of the finals,
yeah,
he's thinking about a movie in 20 years.
Yeah, that's nice.
This program was recorded on tape for a live audience.
When it comes to closing games, me and him are in that same category. I think I only hit one game when he shot my whole career, but you get in for what you're known for. Yeah, that's nice. You know, me and Scotty had our little Instagram verbal Twitter exchange, and it was fun. We saw each other, we laughed, and we hugged. It's all good. No, this is what we do, is that we talk trash.
Yeah, my relationship with Mike is great. It's great as ever. You know, it's nothing changed. This documentary has not changed our relationship. We will be friends forever. Well, we both play the team game, so we understand the value of teammates. Friends forever.